Space versus House, Ms. Joseph.
May it please the court, my name is Nancy Joseph and I represent Mr. Housie. Mr. Housie raises two arguments, Your Honors, that in determining that he was an armed career criminal, the district court erred, number one, in ruling that his theft from person conviction is by nature a violent felony. And number two, the fleeing from an officer is a violent felony. First, in regard to the theft from person, that ruling that it is by nature a violent felony is in direct contradiction to this court's holding in United States versus Lee. In United States versus Lee, the court rejected that very generality that theft from person is a violent felony. In so doing, the court recognized that there were other circuits that had held that theft from person was a violent felony, but rejected and declined to rule in the same way. The court, in ruling that theft from person is not by nature a violent felony, recognized that in a theft from person charge, there is a chance that the victim may be injured, which is what the government argues in saying that it's a potential for injury. The court did not use the word potential, but used the word chance. But the court said, albeit that there is a chance, that chance is not significant enough.
I think it's greater or lesser than the chance of injury in a residential burglary. We know from Taylor that residential burglary is a crime of violence, and the court's rationale is that the burglar may run into the householder and violence may erupt. Well, robbery from somebody's person, you've just run into the householder, right? So one would think, as a logical matter, if residential burglary is a crime of violence, theft from a person has to be a crime of violence. Now, maybe logic is not enough. Maybe there would be data which suggests that theft from a person rarely leads to violence compared to burglary. Do we have any data about the likelihood of violence, of injury ensuing from these encounters?
No, Your Honor, I'm not aware.
Taylor thought that 1 or 2% of burglaries led to some kind of injury. And that would suggest that your proposition would have to be that, say, less than 1% of theft of robbery results in some kind of injury.
I'm not aware of any data, but theft from person can be committed in different ways. The example that the Lee case gives, for example, pickpocketing. And pickpocketing is sometimes can occur without the victim.
Well, I think the standard way of picking a pocket is to bump into a person or knock the person down so that he's distracted and doesn't notice. I mean, it takes real skill actually to extract a wallet from a person if he hasn't been jarred. And somebody with purse snatching, which must be an extremely common form of theft from a person, there's always some, I mean, it's minor violence generally, but you're always, you know, grabbing something from someone.
I think both are correct, Your Honor, that in pickpocketing, a lot of time I think the person's not even aware that they're being pickpocketed, that the wallet has been pulled without the person knowing from a purse.
But as I say, I think that's difficult, and I think it's more common to jar a person. Or
I think I agree that the chance, again, going back to Lee.
And I think purse snatching is more common than pickpocketing, because it doesn't require the same skill. Isn't that true? It's easier to steal an external object than something stuck in a person's pocket. I think women probably are thought more vulnerable anyway than men. So,
I may agree that that purse snatching, again, I don't have the statistics on which is more common, the purse snatching or the pickpocketing, or what numbers of those kind of offenses result in injury. What I can agree is that the potential is there. I guess going back to the question, how much of a potential has to be there before we can say that it is a crime of violence? I think the answer in risk in Lee is that the potential in the statute itself is a serious risk. So the potential has to be serious, or using the language in Lee, the potential has to be significant. I think we can pick any felony and can hypothesize or postulate situations where the victim may be injured. And I think what the Lee case is saying is that just the speculation and conjecture is not enough to generalize any felony from a nonviolent felony to a violent felony. In this case, Your Honor, the court went beyond in making a determination and went beyond the charging document in this case. Although the court did not rely on the complaint, the court went on to talk about what we've been talking about, the speculating on pickpocketing or purse snatching or someone being dragged while their purse is being snatched. Again, that is speculation. It is not information that was in the charging document. It's not information on this particular case. Likewise, Housie complains of the court finding that fleeing is a violent felony. And there, the court erred in deciding fleeing was a violent felony, number one, by going outside of the information. In this case, there was first a complaint which gave a summary of the facts. I think the summary was that Mr. Housie was given a signal and increased his speed up to 60 miles per hour in a residential or urban neighborhood. But the information itself, what it had was the statutory elements of the offense. The information itself was silent on the facts of the charge. In that regard, Lee's case is very similar. Mr. Howes' case is very similar to Lee, where we had a complaint with more detailed facts and information just reciting the statutory elements. In the court, in relying on, number one, the complaint, which is not what Mr. Lee pled guilty to, but the information, the court erred and went beyond the charging document. The court also did what it did in looking at the theft from person, that is, looked at side of facts altogether that were not in the information, that were not in the complaint. The court went on to talk about CV programs where people get into accidents while fleeing from the police. Those facts, again, were not in the charging documents to which Mr. Lee pled. I know that I like to reserve my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Joseph. Mr. Daniel?
May it please the court. Two of the appellant's crimes are at issue bring about the enhancement of 924E. The theft from a person, the defendant argues, is by its nature invoking the logic in Lee, but it refused. He's ignoring the logic in Lee, or the holding in Lee, that allows that you not only look at the...
What did you mean when you said in your brief that the charge on which Housie was convicted was incorporated by reference, the fact of the robbery charge? What is that incorporation by reference?
Your Honor, I'm referring to my appendix, page 6, with the three original complaint and attachments. And it's commonplace in my practice and in practice that I've seen to incorporate a document, an entire document, by referencing that other document. The amended complaint in that Appendix 6 is referring to Appendix page 11, which says that Rodney Howdy took a bicycle from, I presume, a child, a juvenile, by intimidation, that he threatened with imminent use of force to overcome resistance or to overcome or compel acquiescence while armed with a firearm.
Are you saying this document at page 9 of the appendix that says amended complaint is one of the documents that's incorporated by reference in the at page 6? Is that what
you're saying? Yes, I am, Your Honor. And I think that's how Lee comes into play in this case. Not only is the court allowed from Lee to look at the
the problem with that is that the original complaint was for robbery, then the amended complaint down pedals that. And while it does incorporate the original robbery complaint, isn't it possible that something happened to induce them to lower the charge? Other than just plea bargaining, but doesn't it kind of undermine the one's confidence that those are the facts?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think the reason being because the defendant was there, the district court judge was there, and that was what he pled to, and that is the whole premise behind taking a charge that he's pled to and taking that for what it is, rather than creating complicated hearings for sentencing courts to go through. So whether it undermines the confidence, it would have been easy for them to strike out a firearm or strike out the part that said compel acquiescence. And that being the case, there being no strike over or strike out, I think that would give the court confidence to rely on those facts. So in that, Lee allows us to look at the charging document, and since Minnesota only uses the complaint as the charging document, I would urge the court to look at those facts as presented in the charging document, including those incorporated in the theft charge. And I guess just to bolster on that comment from Judge Posner, in Shannon, the court said that it is not confined to the minimum conduct that would create the offense. And I think that too, that it really wasn't any extraneous facts that the court relied on. Something, maybe he had a bullet in his pocket, or something extraneous to the fact of the theft charge, but the fact that he was armed with a gun and that he used that gun to intimidate, to obtain the theft, or to finalize the theft. So I think that too is another thing that could give confidence to that, relying on that document. I'll move on.
But aren't you also arguing that that all theft from a person is crime of violence?
I am, Your Honor, because I'm asking the court to overrule Lee.
Right.
And the reason being is when you have those face-to-face encounters, I think the sentencing court is...
Is this the government's position nationwide?
Yes, it is, it's my understanding, Your Honor. It's my understanding that every court that's looked at it has ruled that theft or related crimes like larceny except for this circuit, are crimes of violence.
But there are no statistics, are there, like the burglary?
And I think that when you reduce it to a statistic, does the separation of one number in a statistic make it so and one number doesn't? I think that that would be tying the sentencing.
No, it, just, it would be interesting, though, to know what the...
Yeah.
I don't think the United States is in much of a position to cast doubt on statistics, given the position the United States took in Beijing.
Yes, that's true.
Or, for that matter, the holding of the Supreme Court in Taylor.
That's true.
They were talked into this by the Solicitor General, who provided the Supreme Court with the statistics, which you have not troubled to provide us with. One would think the Department of Justice would have access to these kinds of numbers.
That's true, Your Honor. Whether or not I would bring it... You're saying to bring it before the district court, the sentencing court judge... at a sentencing where it wasn't the statistics were...
The Solicitor General represents the United States in the Supreme Court. He brought to the attention of the Supreme Court statistics from the FBI's Uniform Crime Reports on the dangerousness of burglary. That's how one makes legal arguments in appellate courts.
I understand, Your Honor. And no, we have not provided that information. But I still think it's fair for a sentencing court to look at the potential or the possibility of a violent confrontation. And on the face-to-face encounters, albeit with no statistics, I think can be logically inferred that there can be violent ramifications. Your Honor, I would also urge the court to find in fleeing that fleeing an officer is, by its nature, a violent crime, as well as the facts from the information imply that it's a violent crime. The facts in the charging document of the fleeing of fleeing crime for the appellant is he increased his speed in city streets and ignoring lights and sirens all in an attempt to flee. I think the sentencing court is well able to view that as a violent crime by its nature. And with the strikeovers in the appendix, I think that's appendix 6. Pardon me, Your Honor, appendix 18. It shows that he did increase his speed in an attempt to flee. So I think both facts, as well as the elements of the crime, make this a violent crime, or this court can interpret it to be a violent crime. As I stated earlier, I do think that this court should overrule Lee. There's a serious potential of a serious injury and theft from person cases because of the possibility of violent confrontation. And that was the holding, that was one of the rulings in Davis at page 217. And because of that ruling, as well as the ruling in Bryant with the escape that somebody might just walk away from a halfway house, because of this court's ruling in that and in Franklin, I think that this court should overrule Lee in that the risk or the potential risk for serious potential injury exists. Your Honor, that's all.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Daniel. Ms. Joseph, how much time does she have? 2 minutes?
Your Honor, the government argues that on the theft from person complaint that the original aggravated robbery complaint was incorporated. The district court, Your Honor, did not rely on that. What the district court did was said, I'm just going to look at the amended complaint as theft from person. But the district court rests its decision on it's the very nature of a theft from person. And on that ruling is in contradiction to Lee. As I said before, the risk is there, but the language in the statute itself doesn't say just any risk. We come up with a lot of risks, but the language in the statute is serious risk, or in the language of the Lee case, significant risk. While there may be a chance, some risk in theft from person, but it has to rise to a level of seriousness or significant risk. For that, I ask the court not to overrule Lee. Lee is not inconsistent with Franklin, that it does recognize the potential, using the word chance, but only ask that there might be a degree of chance or a degree of risk, and that's modified by the word serious in the statute. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Joseph. And so you're part of the defender's operation, so we thank you for your efforts.
Thank you.
And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.